Okay, so then verse 7. Oh, we'll just start this one because there is some time for questions. So how can there be a wheel of karma? Though devoid of intrinsic reality, a reflection of the moon can appear in a cup of water. Karma and its effects, too, manifest in diverse false guises. So within this mere appearance, I'll follow the norms of ethics. Okay? So what it's, you know, the first question is, well, if things are empty, how can there be a wheel of karma? How can karma function? Okay? And then the response, although it's devoid of intrinsic reality, although it's empty, okay, a reflection of a moon can appear in a cup of water. Yeah? So we can take a cup of water out, you know, and put it outside. Actually, it's better to think of a lake, cups of water. It's hard to negotiate them to exactly reflect the moon. Let's do a lake, okay? Okay, so the moon can reflect in a still lake, but there's no moon there. But the reflection exists. How does the reflection exist? It exists in dependence on the lake, on the moon, on the stillness of the air, on the light from the moon. Okay? The reflection exists, but there's no moon there. The appearance of the moon exists dependently on all these various different things. So there's no moon, but there is an appearance of a moon. And that appearance exists dependently. Okay? So just like that, karma and its effects too manifest in diverse false guises. Okay? So all the situations that we find ourselves in are due to, you know, are influenced by our previous karma. So it's, they, our situations came about in dependence upon the causes that we created in the past. But it's not kind of one solid cause giving one solid result. Yeah? And the causal energy is empty, and the results we experience are also empty. But they both appear. Okay. Like right now, we're creating karma, right? Okay. And it appears to us that here's this real situation of, you know, X number of people in the meditation hall at Shravasti Abbey creating karma, doing this activity. Okay? It looks like a solid event. But what is this event? Is it the moment of mind? Is it, you know, time at 5:43, or is it time at 5:44, or is it time at 5:45? What is the event? Is the event any of the specific individuals? Is the event the room that we're in? Is the event the words coming out of somebody's mouth? Or is the event the thoughts happening in all of our minds? What is this action of listening to teachings, which is a karma? Karma means action. So what is this action of listening to teachings? Can we pinpoint anything that is it? You know, you can't, can you? You know, you see that the activity of hearing teachings is dependent on the room, dependent on the floor, dependent on the people here, dependent on our different roles, dependent on our all having learned language, dependent on the voice coming out, depending on the ears and the brain hearing, depending upon how we're all thinking about it, depending on whether we're paying attention or falling asleep. You know, this whole thing depends, doesn't it? There's not one solid activity of listening to teachings. And there's many, many moments. We've been going on for, you know, nearly an hour. So which moment is it that's the event of listening to teachings? You can't isolate in any particular moment. But when we don't examine, then we say, oh, there was the activity of listening to teachings. Okay, so there was the action. We, you know, that's karma. Yeah, it creates some kind of effect because it changes into something else. Yeah, it arose due to causes. It changes into something else. And yet when we analyze and try and find out what this karmic action is, we can't pinpoint anything. And yet here we are, we're listening to teachings, aren't we? Or maybe we're listening to gibberish, I don't know. Yeah? But, yeah, see, following me, you know? It's like we talk about it, but we can't identify one single thing that is it, and yet it's happening, and it's going to bring results. You know, it's going to bring results, immediate results, what happens right after we listen to teachings. Okay? Because if we didn't spend this time listening to teachings, but we spent the time picking pits out of cherries instead, there would be a different thing happening, you know, after the activity. So it influences the immediate result, and then karmically, you know, the activities, the thought processes that are going on in our minds, our different motivations, all those are going to influence things, you know, longer term effects too. Okay? So the action exists and results exist, but they all exist as unfindable when you search for them with ultimate analysis. They all exist just as appearances. Okay? They exist just by name. They exist nominally because we happen to give this activity of people sitting in a room, you know, talking about the Buddha's teachings. We give this the name, the activity of, you know, listening to teachings. But somebody else might call it the activity of wasting time. Yeah. Why aren't you doing something useful with your life? What are you sitting there listening to nothing exists? You know? You should be out making money. Do something useful. Okay, so for them what we're doing, they would label it the activity of wasting time. Okay, that, you know, we could refute the applicability of that label. But they can see it that way. Okay. It doesn't, okay, but it also, this is a good example, just because somebody gives something that label, it doesn't mean it becomes it. So just because somebody says it's a waste of time doesn't mean it is. Okay. Because I could say this cloth is purple, that doesn't mean it is. Okay, there's all sorts of wrong conceptions. Okay. So when we're saying that things exist by being merely labeled, it doesn't mean you can call anything you want. Yeah. Why? Because conventionally, as a group of people, we've given certain definitions to certain sounds. So if we give something a label and that social, you know, definition doesn't apply to it, then that's an incorrect label. It's a wrong conception. I mean, if I looked at this and called it a giraffe. Yeah. Now, before there was the definition giraffe, and before the word giraffe was labeled in dependence upon some animal with spots and a long neck, then at that point, then we could have called this a giraffe. You know? Because giraffe is just a sound. And before it's given, that sound is given any kind of meaning socially, we could have labeled it on any object whatsoever, and then defined a giraffe as a small metal thing that when it's hit, it makes a sound. And then this would be a giraffe. Okay. But that would have had to happen before we gave the sound giraffe any other meaning on a social level. But once we've agreed to the definition of giraffe, then we can no longer call this a giraffe. You know, if we do, it's a wrong perception. Okay? Because it doesn't fit the functioning of a giraffe. Okay, questions? We'll come back and do that verse a little bit more tomorrow.
I'm sorry, can you say a little bit more about when you said that you have the two extremes that are similar, have similarities, nihilism and reification? You said to bring it back into sort of a middle ground. You try to remember that there are two sides of the same coin. Is that
right? Yeah, what... It's dependent arising and emptiness are two sides of the same coin.
Okay.
And that's how you bring it back in the middle. Because you see that things can dependently arise without being truly existent, and you see that they can be empty without being non-existent. You see that things can be dependently arising without being truly existent, and you see that they can be empty of true existence without being totally non-existent. Okay? And this is the thing that both the people who are absolutists and the people who are nihilism, this is what they can't see, because they say, if it's dependent arising, it's truly existent. If it's empty, it's non-existent.
Mm-hmm. So when you think of things then, so does that mean, you know, so should you develop the ability to see things in terms of dependent arising and as karma? That's how you should really look at things.
Yeah.
As opposed to, and that's what holds you sort of in a place where you don't fall into this I self-grasping.
Yeah. The more we can train ourselves to see things as dependent arising, the less self-grasping we're going to have. Because dependent arising is the opposite of inherent existence. Okay? So that's why it's so helpful, you know. Like when we sit down to a meal, yeah, and it looks like there's food. Yeah. Well, what is food? Okay. And so you can analyze it into the parts, you know, the different, is it a leaf, is it a cell, is it an atom, is it a molecule? But it's also interesting to analyze it according to its qualities. So you pick up a piece of lettuce, okay, and you say, here's lettuce. Well, how do you, this is a real interesting thing to play with. How do I know it's lettuce? Well, it's green. Well, is the greenness the lettuce? Is the lettuce the greenness? It's in the shape of a leaf. Well, is the shape lettuce? Is lettuce the shape? Well, there's some resistance, there's some hardness when I touch it. So something's there. Well, is the lettuce just the sensation of firmness, you know, or smoothness, or you touch it and it feels wet? Is lettuce wetness? How do you know that there's lettuce there? And then it's fascinating to play with this. And then you just see how, you know, on the basis of a few criteria, we impute this whole whammo thing on it. You know? It's like, try this when you're doing walking meditation, okay? I say, I'm walking on the floor. Well, how do I know there's a floor there? How do you know there's a floor? Well, there's the pressure against your feet, isn't there? There's pressure. So that's the pressure is an object of your tactile sense. Okay. And you open your eyes and you see some, you know, it's kind of, what color is it? Beige or something with certain designs in it. So you see the color beige with designs in it. doesn't have much taste, it doesn't have much smell, but is the floor the feel, the sensation of pressure? Is the floor the color beige and with designs in it? On what basis are, what is this floor we say I'm walking on? How do I know there's a floor there? Well, I know because there's certain physical sensations and certain things in my eye consciousness. But are any of those physical sensations or the colors that my eye consciousness is seeing, are any of them the floor? None of them are the floor. You know, you can't walk on beige. And you can't walk on a sensation of pressure. But in dependence upon those things, we impute floor. And then we're not satisfied with just imputing floor. But there's a real floor there, isn't there? There's a real floor. Because if there weren't a real floor, well, I would sink down to China and fall through the middle of the earth. Yeah, there's a real floor there. That's the way we feel. But how do we know there's a floor? Are you perceiving the floor directly? Or are you only perceiving qualities? And in dependence upon those qualities, we give the label floor. We say, I see the floor. But what floor are you really seeing? We're just seeing colors. Or we say, I'm feeling the floor. But what floor are we feeling? We're only feeling pressure. Okay? So these are really, you know, when you do retreat and you have like a lot of time to think about this, or tomorrow we'll have a day off, we should, you know, think about this all day. It's really interesting. Yeah.
Uh-huh. Do you find though that it can get a little bit weird here?
Well, what's so bad about it getting a little bit weird? Because we got to grasp it. For somebody who's been in prison for a long time, getting out of prison seems weird. Or if you've been taking drugs for a long time, coming down seems weird. Or if you've had a fever and you've been delirious for a long time, being healthy feels weird. Let's just sit and do a little meditation now and then I'll dedicate.